Hey, thanks for tuning in to another episode of the How to Become an Elite Financial Advisor podcast. I wanted to extend a personal invitation. If you had questions about coming to our How to Charge Live event in April of 2025, that you would go to howtocharge.live.com. That's howtocharge.live.com. Click on a button there that says schedule the call. And I'd love to answer any questions you have about coming to our event in April. It will sell out, but if you have questions, I want to answer them as quickly as possible so you can get your seat to that event. I look forward to seeing you here with us in April. And now, enjoy today's episode.
Man, thanks for being on, brother. Appreciate you.
Hey, my privilege. Absolute privilege.
I think the first question I have is, when is the rest of the world going to realize the metric system doesn't make sense?
I know, right? I know.
True American question.
I just got back from England, and I'll tell you this. I think America's got it more right than wrong.
Oh, okay.
I'll tell you that.
I appreciate that. Vote of confidence. Because,
well, we might have great in our name, Great Britain, but actually I think you're great in many more areas. So go, you Team USA.
Love it. Well, I do appreciate it. I want to hit kind of your background for the audience. And then we'll kind of dive into, I know culture's big, just kind of the business principles you've learned running really big organizations. I want to dive into that today, but yeah. Kind of your highlight reel. We met at a cool event, became buddies. And I've heard other people talk about you, and you find yourself in some pretty neat rooms with some neat people.
I do. Yeah. It's crazy because actually I didn't embark on creating anything that scaled or, you know, went across the world. And yeah, I suppose I ended up with, you know, hundreds and hundreds of staff that worked for me. But I never envisioned doing that with my life. I actually started off as an opera singer. Nice. So I used to look at Mozart and stand on platforms and wear tights and makeup and dance around. And, you know, so it's been learning on the job, and it's been having a vision and then doing the hard yards of creating that into something that other people can see. And I think many listeners, you know, when they have their own dream and they think, can I do it? Well, I just want to be that voice that says, yes, you can. Yeah. Because if an opera singer from the northeast of England can create something that ended up in the White House and in, you know, Fortune 500 companies, then definitely with passion, vision, and capacity, capability, and commitment, you can do something extraordinary with your life.
What were the triggers of, you were pretty heavy in the nonprofit space, which obviously is a business in and of itself, just wrapped differently. Was it because it was nonprofit that kind of was the reason you were willing to go out of music? And would you have jumped to a for-profit business, or were you like, hey, I'll try this thing out, but I'm just going to do it because I want to help people? How'd you get into business?
Well, I got, it's interesting because vision's powerful, right? There is a well-known proverb that says, where there is no vision, people cast off restraint. Like they give up when there's no vision.
Yeah.
But where there is vision, people flourish, right? And I suppose I just got a vision for my life. And, you know, many people over the years have come up to me and said, I can't find my thing, right? I just don't know what to do. And I'm like, well, just do something that you're passionate about, right? If you're passionate about pickleball, do something like, I mean, pickleball's taking over America. I just listened to a podcast about it, like, it destroying tennis, you know. But if you're passionate about something, you know, one of the things that vision needs in order for it to actually connect with people and to become a reality, every vision needs passion. Passion is the fuel to vision. And so I just got passionate about this issue called human trafficking. And I was 26, opera singer at the time, and I thought, wow, someone needs to do something about this. And the next revelation I had is that should be me. Wow. And so I did what any young, passionate 26-year-old would do. I booked an arena in England to tell people about it. We got 5,884 people to our first event, and the rest is history. Scaled it to 12 countries. you know, was responsible for over 100,000 children every year graduating our program. Broke down the largest gang in British history. 51% of the British prosecutions came from our organization. And that came because I had a vision that this problem needed fixing. And then I mobilized people around that vision and was passionate about it.
What would you say, as we have business owners on the phone from solo entrepreneurs where it's like they're running a shop on their own to ones that have tried to scale and grow teams? What's interesting about our business is the advisors usually have to be the main deliverer of advice while also running the business. So it's hard for a lot of advisors to be fully in the business ownership running mode because they have to dip into the delivering the service as well. What are some truths that you would say we all need to learn that you've learned in international business all over the world?
Don't take too much out too early. So I think the number one thing that I realized was that I live, I'm going to steal something from a very well-known America right now, American. Live like no one else. So you can live like no one else. And there's some profound truth about that, that if you take too much out of the business straight away, if you're looking for an income, then you're never going to actually grow and scale a business. You actually need to look at what's going to get you the greatest amount of ROI. And so therefore, you have to sacrifice for what you want most, right? And if you want to scale it, then therefore, I would completely look at your investment strategy. The second thing that I would say is from my lessons is that once you start scaling and you start taking on staff, care about the culture, right? You are a byproduct of your environment, right? So choose your environment well, and don't just as a leader just tolerate the environment, shape it, be an architect of it. Be an architect of your culture. You know, you've heard this famous phrase, haven't you, that culture eats strategy for breakfast. But it really kind of does. Like, culture is everything for an organization. It's what people feel. It's whether they're going to go the extra mile for you. And so don't take too much out, and then be a deliberate architect of your culture. A culture will be a success factor for your ongoing success.
Let's unpack each one of those a little bit. So don't take too much out too soon. I do find in our business, financial advisors, it's a cash flow. It's a ATM. They build something that then creates a really nice lifestyle for themselves. And then you get to this point where a lot of advisors get where they're like, I'm kind of done. Like, I just need to maintain this thing now. It's not very inspirational. You know, it's kind of more about them than like, what impact can I truly make? What's my full potential here? What would you say to business owners that are serving people well, that are well-meaning in life, yet there's something in them that's like, the main reason I'm working is just to create a nice lifestyle and buy nice stuff for myself?
And that's okay, right? I mean, I don't want to say like from a perspective of, hey, you should grow. Not everyone wants to grow like a big company. You know, I always had this vision that was bigger than myself, right? I didn't want to just provide for myself. I wanted to provide for the staff, but ultimately, I was wanting to build a movement that was going to change something. And I think a lot of people actually, if they sit down in a cold, dark room and go in on themselves and say, "What am I happy just to provide for myself?" Most people are actually going, "No, I actually want to do some. I don't want to just have success. I want to have significance.
Yeah,
I want to achieve something with my life, and I want to communicate to business owners and to owner operators. You can do that. You can have that freedom. Like, architect your own life so that you can look at going, what do I? Yes, I want to provide a certain standard of living for my family, but ultimately, I want to achieve something that's beyond myself. You know, I'm someone that's a Christian, and I firmly believe that is being put into my life, that my life was not just meant to be lived for me. actually I was meant to better humanity. And I think one of the best vehicles for that is actually business leaders, because they're often the forgotten people of transformation, right? They're just seen by charities, and I've ran charities and nonprofits, you know, as a checkbook. No, they're not. They're really upstanding citizens that can do great things for planet Earth. So what I would say to that business owner is, first and foremost, is get a vision beyond just an income. But what can you do? Like, vision will make you flourish. So what's your vision? What can you do? What can you put your hand to? Can you fund? Can you set a goal for your business to fund, you know, a feeding the homeless or ending human trafficking or addressing the issues of poverty? Can you have something that's like a vision for your company? Because I believe that's going to help you flourish. The second thing I would say is this, is once you start getting to that point of kind of like the scale point of view and picking the right people around you, being a byproduct of your environment, is once you start articulating what the vision is for your team, one of the things that I did, and if I did anything well, I did this really well, is I had a celebration strategy. So I set the vision, but then I did a bite-sized strategy for each win. I used to say, it used to be these coined catchphrases, right? I still do it now. It's called celebrate what you want to replicate. And we used to do this cool thing that every time that we got a rescue of a victim of human trafficking, we used to open a padlock like we'd open someone's freedom. And we used to write the person's name on the padlock, and we used to stick it on something called a freedom wall. And every time that our staff, every time I walked past it, suddenly my vision became alive in a bite-sized moment where that I saw that padlock and I was like, yeah, that is a win.
Wow. That's powerful. I want it practically. So with the business owners we're talking about, we help people with their money.
Yeah.
Which changes lives. I think you can recognize, celebrate when somebody retires, celebrate, you know, when somebody hits a financial milestone, like how can you be this coach, but also this encourager along the way? To the point of don't take out too much too soon, I do see a lot of advisors where they're really disciplined in like funding their personal retirement accounts and saving money. And like, they're doing the pretty generic financial planning stuff for themselves. But if they put a business owner hat on, like, I don't see a lot of them investing in themselves. It's a lifestyle business, but I'm like, man, if you want to unlock some of these things that Ben's talking about, how aggressively are you investing in yourself? Or do you truly feel like funding a mutual fund for yourself is the best use of that money? Or is it like, no, I need to unlock my vision. I need to get a coach. I need to do these things. What would you tell people in your past organizations or even other business owners where you feel like they think they're stuck, they have this voice inside of them that I could do more, yet they're not really pursuing it aggressively?
Yeah. Then I think, you know, you've got to take ownership of that as a business owner and as the opportunity, and you've got to seek help, right? Mm-hmm. You know, I said before, you're a byproduct of your environment. So choose your environment well. And one thing I always did was I got coaches, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, my first coach, he developed a company from 20 people to being the FTSE 100 company. And you know, he used to, push me. He used to challenge me on where I was spending my time, my focus, my energy. You know, what you focus on, you will get more of. And he was meticulous about where my time was spent. The second mentor that I had, challenged me on how I led my teams, right? He was the CEO of a very, very large international company, you know, budgets of billions and billions and billions. And he used to say this to me. He said, there's two reasons why people will leave your company. One, they don't know the vision, but two, they don't know their place in it. Mm. And he was really passionate about architecting a team that delivers for you consistently. I got so much wisdom from mentors in my life. I got so much that actually curated who I was becoming, right? Mm-hmm. And what I would say is, if you've got a vision to not just be a single member owner operator, but you're kind of hearing this and you kind of go, I want a gun for it. Actually, mm-hmm. you know, that's it. I want to be a gunner. Is actually pick someone that's going to inspire you to do that. Yeah. That's going to challenge you in where you focus, the challenge on how you build your team, how you structure your business, and that tells you that you are doing stuff that you shouldn't be doing, right? I mean, one of the greatest things that I did was I didn't do it all. I got people that were better than me at doing, you know, and I think a lot of people from I don't know if it's a poverty mindset, but that's like, I can't be bothered to outsource it or to get someone on because I've been let down before. I mean, how many of us have been let down by staff? You know, I've got word from the Lord, get over it, move on. You can't keep on doing it all. Yeah. And this is one thing that I did really well was I decided that I would take on people that were better than me. I would empower them. And the most important thing, I would trust them to actually deliver for me.
Mm. How would you, something we're trying to develop now is almost like some kind of on-ramp boot camp, meaning as a business owner, if I'm waiting and looking for somebody to fall in my lap that's totally prepared and equipped to thrive in the role I have for them, I'm probably going to be waiting a long time. What responsibility did you take when it came to like, I have to develop and unlock the potential in this person intentionally, not just by like trial and error over time?
It's a really interesting this one. Like I say, I'm a local church boy, right? I've attended local church all my life, right? The language that in church language is a son of the house. Like, how do you develop people to be a son of the house? Amen. Uh-huh. Right. But actually, how I used to phrase it was this, is that we need to grow. So in a room, in our organization, is that we need to actually have the ability internally to grow people into roles that we know that are becoming, right? But ultimately, I'm not afraid to go out headhunting for people that can deliver projects and can be what I need right now.
Got it.
And so we used to have this phrase, and it might fit this scenario, but it was a weird thing. And I know it's weird. But we used to have this phrase of midwives and mothers, right? And we used to try and grow midwives, but we used to grow mothers, but we used to try and outsource to midwives, right? So in the organization, you know, when you deliver a baby, when you've got this business, that you've got this idea and you kind of want to grow it and you want it to become a teenager, you want it to be healthy, you know, there's a time in that baby's life where there's a midwife in that life, right? There's a season where you need that system, you need that delivery, you need that project managed. And I used to go out and I used to go, we don't need a mother for this. We need a midwife. Mm. But there is a time in your organization, there is functions that are in your organization that are mother organized, you know, mother roles. I know this is weird.
I'm tracking.
You're tracking. I'm hoping that all that your listeners are tracking and you don't think this English guy's really weird. But there is two functions. And so what I used to do when I used to think, right, we need a role here. I used to go, do I need someone that we need to grow that understands our culture, value system, that's going to be with us, that's going to add value to our team, that's more than just a function, but it's something we're going to build on. Then I'm going to build on a mother.
Got it.
But if it's a project, like I just need a service, like bookkeeping, like something like that, well, I don't care. I just get a midwife in. And that helps speed it up because I care about the people in my office far more than the function that I'm outsourcing.
Got it. That makes sense. So what are you passionate about now?
Well, I'm passionate about helping people unlock their potential. I mean, for me, I want people, you know, like all your listeners, I was there. Like I've been there with no team, small team, like having to do everything. I've been in my basement. I've been like celebrating every little win, every new client coming in. I've been there. Like I've been at the time where you're going, should we open up a new office? Should we close down a new office? Are we hitting the ROIs? Have we got the right systems in place? Have we got the right people? Are we now capping out at these people? And do we need to recruit someone over them that's going to be more capable, but is it going to offend the people that have been with me a long time?
Wow.
You know, there is so much functionality that goes on, and politics and leadership decisions. And, you know, one of the things that I say, the best leaders ask the best questions. And if you're questioning now going, do I want to grow? Have I got the right team to grow? Have I got mothers, or have I got, you know, have I got a team and a room full of midwives that just don't care about this kid that I've just, you know. So what I'm passionate about is helping people to grow their business, because ultimately, if you can grow your business, you can be more generous, you can help more people, you can employ people, which I believe I'm a compassionate capitalism, compassionate capitalist, meaning that I believe that compassion should be in capitalism, and that capitalism is the way forward. And so what I'm doing now, I'm running businesses, consultancy businesses that help people grow and scale and grow their businesses. But also, I'm running a company that I've realized that a lot of companies should be outsourcing to, which is goodbookkeeping.com. Because a lot of business owner operators are going, well, I don't really want everyone to see my books, so I'm just going to do them myself. And then 2 months goes down, 3 months goes down, and they don't actually ever do their bookkeeping. And I've partnered with a couple of business guys that we've created this business, one that was a former PwC director, another that's a business owner of tens of millions. And we've kind of come together to provide this service, goodbookkeeping.com, to small to mid-sized companies to say, hey, don't do it yourself. Let us, the experts, do it for you. And we have accountants that do your books so that you can get the numbers so that you can make the best decisions. What are leaders really paid to do? They're actually paid not really to do the hours. They're actually paid to make the best decisions. And so how do you make the best decisions in a business? By knowing your numbers. How do you get to know your numbers? By having good bookkeeping.
So what you lived this out, that's part of the reason I hear a little passion, is like, I've seen it done not a great way, but I know I need it done well. I've used bookkeeping. I've had clients use bookkeeping. What have you learned by launching this big business that, you know, the trajectory it's on, you know, will kind of potentially shake up an industry, which is great. What do a lot of us not know about bookkeeping, where we take it for granted as like all bookkeeping is the same?
Yeah, it's not. I mean, here's the thing. I think for me, we have accountants doing bookkeeping, and we're value driven, and we're excellence at the heart of what we do. So for me, a bookkeeper can do your reconciliation. It can do all the, you know, the cost allocations. It can help with your P&L, your balance sheets, your cash flow statements. But it's what you do with that information that actually counts, and why we've got people from a PwC background is we want to give you in a package things that you can question, that you can say, oh man, if I just invest, if I don't take from this, you know, the first point we said, don't take too early, and I invest in this, I'm going to see compound growth, and I'm going to actually be able to start taking on staff members, and I'm going to be able to grow this thing. You see, how I grew it to, eventually, I had 45 offices, 12 countries, budgets of tens of millions, right? How did I do that? I made the decisions from the accurate data that I was getting from my finances so that I could look at what was winning, what wasn't, and what I needed to do about it. That is the essence of bookkeeping.
Love that. Yeah, I do find that most business owners and most advisors I coach are reactionary. It's like something has to be on fire, and the fire has to be big enough to get it thinking. And so most strategic planning is let's make up some stuff. Let's hope it works out. And then we'll look way too late before we pivot anywhere. So I'm a big proponent of a monthly scorecard. Look at your financials, stay in the know. It's tough because we know at some level of business that's true, and it has to be done. But then as you go down market a little bit with the size of company or the size of teams, it's almost like we don't think we qualify for that level of intention or it's not necessary, that what's true up here is true down here. And there's a reason they have to do it up here because that's what got them there.
It's exactly right. Right. When I was in that basement, one of the first things I ever did was get someone that was going to help me with the finance.
No.
Because I knew I'm not a finance person, although I am a finance person. I'm not a certified chartered accountant or a CPA. I got someone in, and it was Rob, actually, the guy that was one of my mentors. He helped, and he was a trained accountant, and he had 10,000 staff in business, and he was doing this on the side, and he put in all our financial systems, which meant that I knew what our ROIs were. And so, therefore, I was able to say yes to things that should be said yes to, and no to things that should have a no. You know, Steve Jobs says it's as important as what you say no to as what you say yes to.
That's right.
And how do you say no to something that you don't know if you're literally putting your finger up in the air and going, yeah, I think it's working for us? And I think that's where most small businesses are, is they go, I think, yeah. Well, don't think, no. And then add a yes to the winning components of your business.
Yeah, if you have enough money in the bank to fund your own lifestyle and make payroll, that's probably not the best measure of a successful business. And I think that's what a lot of business owners and even advisors are doing. It's like, there's money in the bank, so I'm just going to keep doing what I'm doing. For the advisors listening, I think this is a challenge to you as a business owner. Do this better for yourself, but also for every client you consult. If they own a business and you do not feel, and as you get passionate about this and realize how important it is, you will lean in more with those clients to say you need good data. Like, encourage a business owner to spend $300-$500 a month to get good data and outsource it to somebody else. And the more I've done this, when I do engagements with business owners, I lean into this. Cash flow, emergency fund, P&L, you may jump over that because there's no product to sell. It's not investments and it's not insurance. But that is a sexier part of the financial planning process than I think most of us think it is. And as advisors, we need to lean into that.
Yeah, I think so. And I think to the advisors saying, actually, this is what's going to actually help your client to sustain their investments as well, right? Because ultimately, you're going to get better clients. You're going to get clients that are actually understanding their own business and are able to address the issues.
Yeah.
I would totally agree with what you're saying, man.
Man, this is great, brother. So goodbookkeeping.com. Everybody check that out. You're doing big stuff, man. And I appreciate you. This was great.
Oh, love you.
See you, brother. Sten here. Hope you're doing well. I want to ask you for a favor. My legacy team is growing, and I'm looking to fill a couple positions. I'm looking for an experienced advisor, somebody that can come in right away and start serving clients to help us handle the overflow of opportunities we have. But I'm also looking for up-and-coming advisors, a pair planner, junior advisor that wants to learn with me to come help level up our team, but also allow me to help them level up and scale their business quicker over time. If you are interested in this opportunity or you know somebody that would be a potentially a great fit, please email us at arome@investlegacy.com. We're happy to follow up with anybody, have a conversation with them. So if you can keep your eyes and ears open, I'd really appreciate it.